Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You're now locked into The Zone with Diamonds and Roses podcast, bringing you one step closer to Pacific Northwest and Southwest Canada baseball news, stories, and history. Proudly fueled by baseballism, they're America's brand, Big League Chew, the official bubblegum of Diamonds and Roses podcast, and Devo Bat Company, professional wood grain bats for the love of the game. And now your hosts, Ben and Travis.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. As always, I am your host, Ben. Other host, Travis, and traveling roadshow, John, are out and about doing things and making things happen in life. So they will be rejoining us soon on this very great podcast that we have. But today, I'm bringing to you live the 2017 Kansas City Royals pick, Josh Mitchell. He's joining me today. So thank you, Josh, for joining.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you on. And I appreciate it because, you know, Josh's connection with the West Coast is that he played ball in 2016 for the Victoria Harbor Cats of the West Coast League. We will get into that momentarily. But I want to start off and asking Josh a few early years questions for him.
Okay.
My first question that I usually like to ask my guests is, what's your earliest memory of baseball? Not personally playing, but just kind of like something like, hey, I watched it. You know, I went to a park with my dad or my mom or my uncle, my aunt, my grandpa. We watched it on TV. What's your earliest memory of baseball?
Oh, man. I think the earliest memory of mine would be my first baseball glove when I was four. I remember my grandfather got it for me when I was 4 years old. And then after that, it was been kind of gone from there. It's kind of the story was told there.
Do you recall if you like smelled the glove at all just to, you know, see what it smelled like and everything?
I remember opening it. And I remember it was in a box too. So I remember I undid the wrapping paper and I opened it up and I'm like, you guys got me a box. I was, you know, as a little kid, I'm expecting a toy or something or, you know, whatever. And I was a little upset. Then he opened the box and he handed it to me. And I just like, I remember putting it on and looking at it. And I'm like, I don't know what this is. Like, I didn't know what it was. And then it soon became, it became just the staple. I knew what it was after that.
Nice. Now, when did you first start playing baseball? Shortly thereafter, is that why you got it as a present, or was it just kind of just for, you know, your grandparents, whoever got it for you?
Nah, I started playing shortly thereafter. It started with T-ball and went the whole way through. But my family's a big sports family, as it has always been. So like that was like the initial start of my sports career in general, just as a kid. So,
who was your team growing up?
I was a Pirate fan just because I'm, you know, from Pennsylvania. I was they consider the hometown team. I know they're just, they were terrible for a while there. And then when I got to, got to college, everything started to pick up. And me, you know, going to school at the University of Pittsburgh, it was nice too. They were winning. We would go to games some nights. I mean, tickets were still pretty cheap, even though they were winning. So it was nice to just go and watch some pretty good baseball.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a favorite player from the Pirates?
I didn't. I mean, obviously, you know, when he was there, McCutchen was everyone's favorite. They obviously, you know, fun to watch, exciting, electric, all that. But if I had to pick one at the time, would have been Mark Melancon. You know, me being a reliever and a closer, it was fun to watch him go out and do his job. He did it every night. It was fun to watch. So,
Now, what point in your early on career? Because you're a pitcher, what point early on did you know that this was something that you're interested in wanting to pursue further?
So the funny thing is I was actually a better hitter than pitcher growing up. And I just threw hard and got away with it. But as a hitter, I had more fun doing that. I enjoyed that more, just being able, you know, showing up the early BP rounds, getting my swing ready for the game. And then when the game came, it was just second nature. But remember when I was about 12, my dad and I were playing catch in the yard, just having a nice little catch. And he goes, all right, you can start throwing them a little harder. So I threw one. I remember reaching back and throwing one pretty hard and him not really seeing it or not seeing it at all. And it buzzed by his head and he didn't even move. I remember him turning and looking. And he goes, I just go by my head. And I'm like, yeah, dad, it did. And after that, it was like, all right, we're done. I can't play catch with you anymore. That's when I kind of realized I had a gift that not too many people have.
Mm-hmm. I remember personally, like some of my earliest times, because I used to pitch when I was younger, and like my oldest brother, because I had no control at first when I first started, and we were out back of the house, we were standing there. My brother's like, okay, rock back and throw it. And I just threw it and it went right through the window.
Well, I've done that a few times too. Don't worry. You're not the only one.
my dad was so pissed off at me. It was absolutely hilarious. Do you have one? Yeah. You have one of those? You sounds like you have one of those stories.
I've got some golf ball through the window stories. I got a football through the window, and one baseball through the window. That was I hit it. It was my fault. I blamed it on my little brother, but it was my fault.
So what got you addicted to baseball? Because there's obviously a point in time in everybody's like career early on when you're playing, and then you just all of a sudden it clicks and you're like, this is what I want to do.
It was very early on, but I guess the thing that got me addicted was knowing that I'm left-handed, you know, being a left-handed pitcher is kind of a dime a dozen. And being one that throws hard too now is even more rare. So that's probably when I knew that, you know, I have a gift, like I said, that not too many people do have, and I want to take advantage of it. And then just putting in the work every day, year in, year out, kind of like I got addicted to putting in the work and the process of, you know, potentially becoming a, you know, a big leaguer and working towards that. So that was what kind of drew me in. And then I've been there ever since.
What was your high school experience like for you playing sports?
I was hectic. You know, I played football, played baseball, I played basketball, and I also golfed in the fall along with football too. So there wasn't much downtime, but it was fun because, you know, every sport, especially in a small town, you're playing with the same group of guys each season. So got real close, have my, you know, best of friends are still from, they're still the ones I went to high school with, and we still stay close. But I mean, it was hectic. Won a lot of games of basketball. Baseball, we were okay. Football, we were all right. Golf, we were good. But there was a winning mentality that went on in that high school, and it was fun to be a part of.
What worked for you as a high school athlete for conditioning and training? And what would you do differently now, knowing what you know?
Knowing what I know now, I was under the impression in high school, and this is kind of just trickled down from my dad and my grandfather, that baseball players don't really work out too hard. You know, like you got to stay flexible and all that. And then getting into college and pro ball now, I mean, we're, you know, pitchers are some of the guys that lift the heaviest in the weight room. So if I would have, you know, that probably would have been what I would do, that, you know, what I would switch up back then, as I would lift a little heavier, actually not a lot heavier, but I would do that. Focus more on just being more powerful instead of, you know, flexible and stuff like that. But what worked for me was just being as active as we, you know, as all of us were, all my buddies running together, all my buddies just, and I just playing every sport. So it's, no matter what, we were always in shape. Yeah. We might have to run a little bit more during basketball, but for the most part, we were always in great shape and ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of owners that I've spoken to in the West Coast League and some of the coaches that I've spoken to have always expressed having a well-rounded student athlete in high school because of building different, you know, muscles up, having different mechanics mm-hmm. and so on, and playing different sports year round as opposed to playing one builds a better athlete. Do you hold that true?
I do. I mean, just being an athlete, being able to, you know, like I played four different sports. So, you know, growing up, I wasn't just specialized just in one sport. So I didn't really put a whole lot of stress or anything into my arm or anything like that, or overdo it really. I was playing different sports, playing different positions, using different parts of my body, doing stuff like that. So I would like to say I was a well-rounded athlete. And I think when it came time to start specializing in one thing, it just made that easier. And then it made me being an athlete, you know, I could carry that over. When I started specializing in one thing, that one thing kind of went through the roof.
At what point were you like knowing in your mind that maybe baseball is the path that I'm going to take and going to pursue over some of these other sports that you were playing?
Well, basketball, I'm not very big. Football, I played quarterback. I was pretty good there. Football was like the first love, just because there's not too many other sports like it. And my dad was a big football player in high school too, so that kind of trickled down as well. Golf, I could hit a ball a long way. In high school, I wasn't the best putter. Now my putting game is probably my best part of my game. But baseball was when I started seeing college offers, and I started getting emails and phone calls and people showing up the game saying they were interested. Stuff like that, because I didn't get those in any of the other sports. But that was when I was like, all right, I can at least get, you know, most of, if not all of my college paid for. You know, which is the main goal, was just to get the education. You know, pro ball was icing on the cake, and I didn't really think about it until the time came. But when I started seeing college scouts and even some pro scouts show up, I was like, all right, maybe I am, you know, a little better than I give myself credit for or even thought. So maybe this does have a chance to manifest itself into something.
Is there one coach early on in your baseball career that you remember to this day and probably had one of those bigger influences on you? And I'm just talking up through high school at this point.
Up through high school. So my dad and my grandpa were always the two guys that coached and were always in my corner. So those two for sure.
What was it like? What was that like having them as your coaches? Cause you know, I mean, obviously it's like, they always tell you, don't hire your family, don't work with your family. It's like right. One of those separate thing. I've had parents, you know, I had my dad, my brother coach, and I know that there's been butting of heads at times. What was that experience like for you?
There's a lot of butting of heads. There was, but I think for me, it's a blessing and a curse. Cause you know, no matter what, you're held to a higher expectation. So there's no wiggle room or no room for error, which in turn had made me a better ball player. But there are some times that you just wanted to smack them. I'm going to be honest, just being a family, just being a relative. It's just like, you didn't feel like you were being heard. You didn't feel like you were, you know, your opinion mattered. So, but deep down, you know, as I've gotten older, I know that what they did and how they went about it was for the betterment of me. And it made me into who I am today.
What kind of leadership leadership abilities and aspects and things that you could take away from what they taught you that you carry on till today?
Oh, I still do it today to this point, even me being a 26-year-old, you know, closer. But just the biggest thing was, you know, they always say, you know, lead by example. I really didn't know what it meant, because I only knew one way when I was growing up. And knowing that one way was leading by example, that's the one thing I knew. So coming in, you know, whether it be the basketball practice, football, baseball, whatever it may be, weight room session, whatever, come in, shut up, keep your head, you know, listen, work hard, and just give it everything you possibly can. Those are the three things, were just shut up, listen, and work hard. That was it. So I carry that to this point, and then, you know, to this day. And if somebody is talking, or somebody needs to be put in their place, I don't have a problem doing it. You know, it should be just a one-time thing, where, you know, especially coming from a peer, it doesn't have to be a coach or someone of authority. Usually coming from a peer is when I took more of a notice, like, I need to get in gear. I need to get in line.
So you ended up attending Pittsburgh for your collegiate career. What other schools were you interested in at the time, and what other universities or colleges showed interest in you?
So there were a lot of schools. So Pitt was honestly the last school to come in to the recruiting game, but the other ones were Penn State, West Virginia, UNC, Virginia, Liberty, Eastern Kentucky, Ohio State was a big one in the beginning, and Virginia Tech.
What was that factor for Pittsburgh?
It was close. My parents would come see me on the weekends. It was ACC baseball. I mean, that's tough to beat. That's one of the best conferences, if not the best, every year. So tough to beat. I wanted to change. You know, I came from a really, really small town in the middle of nowhere. So I was thinking about it, you know. I'm like, I want to change. I want to experience some city life. I want to see what that's like. And it was the right decision in my book.
Explain that first year. You get done with high school, you graduate, big man on campus at that point, go into college. Now you're the little guy on campus, going into a brand new program with all these people that you've never played baseball with in your career. Unlike in your high school career where you came up through with these guys, what was that first experience like for you meeting your team and so on?
It was so that freshman year, we had a lot of seniors and a couple of fifth and sixth year guys. So it was different. You know, it was I went from I went from being the big guy on campus to one of the younger guys. And then I'm with grown men. I'm with guys that are getting ready to, you know, start the workforce or go play pro ball, or, you know, have serious girlfriends thinking about marrying. I was like, hey, there was a question, and I was like, what did I get myself into? But it went well. You know, the fall went really well. Ended the fall well. You know, went into the little Christmas break well. I was supposed to be the Friday night starter as a freshman. I went in, I put on a show. I did my job. I impressed the right people, and unfortunately, I ended up having shoulder surgery. I believe the date was February 3rd of 2014. You know, I everything leading up to it was great. I didn't have any issues. It was just one of those things where one pitch and felt something funny. Then all of a sudden, it was downhill from there.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah.
So you end up that summer of 2015, you end up playing your first summer for the Victoria Harbor Cats of the West Coast League. Now, we could jump into that, but before we jump into actually being there, did you know of anything of the West Coast League at that point in time prior to hearing about going?
Not really. I remember the coach saying, you know, list a few of the leagues you want to go to, one of our volunteer assistants at the time, he's going to set it up. So I listed a few, and I'm looking around, looking at leagues. I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to get away. I'm like, it's summer. It's like, you're supposed to play baseball, have fun. I'm like, I want to go as far away as I can. Where can I go? And then there was obviously Alaska. I'm like, I'd rather stay, you know, in the mainland kind of thing. And then I saw the West Coast League. I'm like, bingo, that's it. I'm like, that's where I want to go. Made that my number one. And it was great. He was like, you sure? I'm like, yeah, let's go. I'm like, I'm down to go play in the West Coast. I didn't even realize there was a team in Canada. But I'm like, I'm down to go play in the West Coast and, you know, enjoy my summer in the Pacific Northwest. And
yeah. When did you find out about, like, hey, we got this team in Victoria that wants you to go and play there?
The day that my coach said, hey, you're going to be a Victoria Harbor Cat, I go and say, what? I'm like, I don't remember seeing that team. And they're like, oh yeah, it was at the very bottom. They play on a small island in Canada. I go, wait a minute, I'm going to Canada? He goes, yeah, make sure you have a passport. I go, ah. Oh. I was like, oh, no. I'm like, all right, fine. So I went and got the passport, did all that. But I was excited. I was looking forward to just throwing a little bit more, getting some more innings, and just enjoying the summer.
Yeah. And did you get a call from, you know, who did you get the first phone call from Victoria about going
and playing? I believe it was Jim. It was Jim Swanson. Yeah, I talked on the phone a little bit. I was the first player to actually arrive, funny as that is. So got to meet him face to face. He was a good guy. He's a Jim. You know Jim. He's a fantastic guy. And he took care of me in my two seasons there. And he's really had my back through a lot of stuff. And we still stay in contact today. Actually, he came down to Florida about a month ago. And it was great to see him and his wife. It was, you know, he'll forever be, you know, one of my biggest supporters, one of my biggest allies, and one of my best friends.
He's got a good receding hairline too.
Yeah, beautiful. Jim, I'm sorry if you hear this. I'm sorry. He baited me into it.
But, you know, Jim's a baseball guy, you know, through and through. I mean, he's one guy that you could sit down and like talk hours upon hours about baseball. And I think that guy loses more than about baseball than I know will ever know about baseball.
He really does. And that's what really made me want to come back for a second season. And that story is a whole other story, and we'll get into that one. But like knowing who I had in the front office there and what they could offer for me from a baseball experience, and how much they really did care about me from the first year, because there was a lot of extra stuff that went on. But like I said, we'll get into that. But how much they cared and how much they wanted to actually see me succeed was the driving force of why I went back. And when you have something like that, you can't turn it. You can't look the other way. You gotta take that and run with it. And I did, and it changed my career.
Yeah, I've talked to several of the coaches on the staff there, and they're all individuals who really, really care about the well-being, not only on the field but off the field, of the athlete. Yeah. I'm assuming that's the similar reaction that you have, or maybe you want to add on to that.
Oh yeah, we can add on to it too. I'll lead into the other stuff too, but they really do. The well-being on and off the field, and then, you know, having just coaches that want to win too. Greg Merritt was unbelievable, man. I will go to bat for that man for the rest of my life. The coaches that have him, Jim, and Joe Faub, who was the pitching coach, kind of changed my career and brought it back to, and kind of resurrected it. We'll put it that way, because, you know, that next year at Pitt after that, you know, that 2016 season at Pitt, I got hurt, had some setbacks. The head coach didn't want to bring me back. He told me, you know, I only ended up throwing like maybe four or five innings. And the head coach, you know, it was in a nutshell, my, you know, exit meeting pretty much told me, he's like, hey, we're going to, you know, take your scholarship, we're pulling your scholarship. You didn't do much. You didn't do anything for us this year, you know? So Jim was actually, ironically, the first person that called me the first year for Victoria was Jim. And then he was the first person that I called when all that went down. And it was, I go, Jim, I got a question for you, man. You got one more spot for a lefty. And he goes, we've been waiting for your call. Those were the words. And after that, it was pretty set on what I was doing. And he was like, absolutely, you know, and I told him the whole story. I said, Jim, if, you know, I don't think I'm going to go back to Pitt. Can you start, you know, maybe put the word out for some schools that, you know, I could possibly finish my career at, stuff like that. And he did the dirty work. There were scouts there at every game. You know, he really put me under his wing, is what it felt like, and took care of me. He always checked in on me, always made sure I was okay. But that whole 2016 summer, just season in general, was, I played with a chip on my shoulder because, you know, I thought I was done. I thought that was being my last hurrah for baseball. Mm-hmm. And I figured, why not go to the place that treated me so well the first time? And then,
yeah, you had a hell of a season that year, that summer.
I did. Yeah, it was.
I mean, records of 7-0. A 1.87 ERA. You had 13 games with 9 starts. I mean, 51 strikeouts. You had one hell of a season.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the stats right now, and it's phenomenal. Like, I mean, obviously, like you just said, you had a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, but talk to me about, like, you know, Jim, this is one side of Jim that I know that he has, but it's from a player perspective, it's a little bit different than a personal relationship that you have, personal slash professional relationship that you have with him. Talk to me about, like, okay, so he's working with you that year, these coaches are working with you. Like, what's something that you think that you also took away from that staff and that summer that you're going to carry with you for the rest of your life?
The rest of my life, I mean, self-confidence, because I went back out there kind of with, like, my tail between my legs. Yeah, I had a chip on my shoulder, but, you know, I was down that, you know, somebody I trusted, somebody who said that I was going to do this and that for them at school kind of had, like, you know, backed out and lost faith in me, lost belief in me, and to the point where they wanted to get rid of me. So somebody who believed in me and, you know, gave me a little bit of confidence. They didn't tell me what I needed to hear. They didn't tell me what I wanted to hear. They told me what I needed to hear at the time. And some of it was harsh. But at that time, I was 21 years old. It was time for me to grow up and move on and figure it out. And I did. And it was the right amount of tough love and arm around the shoulder when I needed it, or arm around the over shoulder when I needed it. And he treated me more of as a player. Like I said, he treated me more as like a player, that almost like his son, that was his son. And he, and at the time it was perfect. It was exactly what I needed to help get me back on my feet. You know, that's what he did. He got me back on my feet instead of me just standing there. He got me back running, and it was great. It was like, you know, you saw it, some of the best baseball I've ever played. Mm-hmm. And it was any given night I could have gone out and struck out 10 guys. That's how confident I was. And any given night I was going to go out and give you 7 innings. Like, I had that much confidence in myself, and so did they. And when they exuberate it, then I absorb it. Then I exuberate it to my teammates as well. So he gave me that level of belief in myself and confidence that I will always have. And I'll always have that chip. And then if anyone is ever looking for places to play, I always send them straight to Victoria first. I'm like, you need to go there first.
Now, I want to take a quick second for those of you that are listening to this episode that don't know the West Coast League. It's located in Oregon, Washington, Southwest Canada, and it's actually moving up to Edmonton, Kelowna, and a few other places. There's, I think, 5 teams right now currently in Canada, located in Canada, and there's other teams scattered throughout Oregon and Washington. But it's just, like, if you're aware of it, it's like the Cape Cod League. It's a summer collegiate wooden bat league for athletes like Josh, who was in college, or those going from high school to college, having that ability to play with wooden bats. Sorry, I just wanted to mention that, Josh, because, you know, I mean, there's some people who don't understand what the West Coast League is. But let's go back to Victoria. Let's go back to the Harbor Cats. Wilson's Group Stadium, beautiful stadium. Great atmosphere from what I hear. I'm hoping to get to experience it next summer. But what was that experience like for you at Wilson's Group Stadium?
It was great, especially when you got little kids painting their face. I didn't have this beard, but I had a beard at the time, and it was pretty thick for, you know, the most part. But it was cool seeing, like, as I would walk out of the tunnel after getting ready to go warm up, and after warm up, walk down the side, and I would see these kids come running to the front row with their faces painted like a beard. It was great. It was the coolest thing. These guys treated me like a big leaguer when I was really only a 21-year-old in college. Like, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. But when you got 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6,000 fans in the stands on any given night, it's like, this is pretty cool. Like, yeah. I don't remember a small crowd that I pitched in front of, even when we were playing bad, which wasn't too often, but, like, I don't remember a small crowd. And mm-hmm. I just always remember a loud and just rambunctious crowd that actually was baseball savvy, which was the best part. Like, they, mm-hmm. they got the game. They understood what was going on, and they fired me up a lot.
Yeah. Well, do you recall a particular player that you just, in your time in the West Coast League, that you just loved pitching against and you just had a little bit of rivalry against? Do you recall anybody?
No, I don't. That's the thing. When it comes time to actually pitching like that, and I was in a zone the whole summer, so I really don't remember some of the guys I played against. I remember the majority of the guys that I played with, but not I really don't remember too many of the guys I faced. Whether they were right-handed or left-handed, that's really all I knew, and it's really all Merritt and I focused on.
What's his name? Kevin. Kevin Costner? Like when he in like for the love of the
clear,
game, like
clear the mechanism.
Clear the mechanism. Is that you?
I didn't have a saying like that, but usually it was when I took a deep breath and looked at the catcher. That's all I saw. It was. I can look back and I can tell you that, but I can't tell you the feelings or like the emotions tied to them. I was just locked in the zone to the point where I went out and did my job almost every. I think I had one bad start in there, but I went out and did my job, and I was so focused on doing my job that nothing else mattered.
Yeah. So how do you think your time with Victoria prepared you for your professional career?
It definitely got me used to living in a hotel room. I will say that. It definitely got me ready for that. But just to playing all the games back to back to back with really no off days, and just embracing the fact that, like, all right, we got a 9-game road stint. Here we go. Like, let's enjoy it. And then just the camaraderie that it brings when you're on the bus and just figuring out how to pass time, especially on long bus trips, which coming from Victoria, you got a good amount.
Were you the Kevin Costner sitting in back of the, playing the guitar like in Bull Durham?
I was definitely in the back of the, I was definitely the last person on that bus. I was also, I think, one of the older guys. So I was taking younger kids under my wing. I don't play the guitar, but I played a lot of cards. I was a dealer a lot and teaching people how to do this, teaching people how to throw different pitches, how to do this, do that, and just getting to know my teammates. And that was the biggest thing on those bus rides, was getting to know each individual teammate. So when it came time to, if it came time for me to put my arm around somebody or jump down somebody's throat when they needed to, when they just needed a kick in the ass to get going, like, I knew what buttons to push. I knew where to go. I knew how to light that fire. And that's what really set me aside as a leader and like the, almost like the captain of the team was doing that. And I got a lot of that from Greg himself. And he kind of like, being a returning guy, he kind of like, I don't want to say like gave it to me, but pretty much like, hey, listen, this, you're a returner, you know what to expect. Let's go have a great season. And I kind of took that as, I'm the captain, this is my team, and as I go, we go. So
how would you rate the level of play in the West Coast League?
As a league, I think it's, obviously there's the Cape Cod, that they're a league of their own. But I think we're second, if not third. I really do. I believe it's a great league. And you're playing almost like a mini minor league schedule, like games every day, traveling. So I would rate it up there. I really would. Excuse me. There we go.
Yeah. So, but you talked a little bit earlier about not knowing if you're going back to Pitt, but it's clear you returned to Pitt. At what point did you know that you're going to return, and did you get that scholarship back?
So I ended up, I think it was like the last couple starts of the season, a couple schools. Hawaii was a big one. I almost signed to go to Hawaii. I don't think I ever would have left the island either. So I probably would have stayed there for a while. But I got a call from my head coach one of the games prior to a game saying, hey, we see you're pitching well, we'd love to have you back, da 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 da. And I answered it, but I didn't say anything. And I went out, and that was actually one of the games I didn't pitch a lot. And then 2 days later, he calls me back and says, hey, like, we don't want you, we think we're going to go a different direction. And I go, listen, I'm coming back. I'm going to be your Friday night starter, and I'm going to get drafted. I'm going to be the best player on the team. And he laughed at me. I was like, that was all the motivation and temptation that I needed. So told all those schools I was going to go back and earn the spot. And they were like, all right, you got one more year eligibility, because I got redshirted my freshman year because of my shoulder. They go, something doesn't work out, you can always, use that as a transfer year or a grad year. Ooh, excuse me. But so I took that into consideration as well. But I went back with this, with the mindset that I wasn't going to be denied anything. And it wasn't easy, I'll tell you that. Because there was a lot of shit that I had to deal with, and all of the hoops I had to jump through just to get looked at, just to get an opportunity. And it was nice that I only needed like three classes in the fall. So really my focus was just baseball. And it was proving to myself that I belonged, not so much proving everybody wrong, because that can be a dark path to go down, but proving to myself that I'm good enough, if not better than all these players here. And it so happened that it worked. I earned the Friday night spot. I separated myself. I proved to myself that I'm the best player on this team and the best pitcher on the staff, and it worked.
Yeah. You know, I hate, not to try to be funny, but to quote Ted Lasso, it's like, believe. You got to believe and believe.
I've never seen Ted Lasso yet. I heard it's good. I gotta get on that.
But
that's
like,
the thing, yeah.
But like Ted Lasso, just like believing in yourself. I think that's one of the things, you know, that teaches you. But believing in yourself and believing that, you know, you could kind of come back from this, seems to me it's like your story. It seems like your story about overcoming, you know, injury, overcoming, you know, this obstacle of going back to one of the schools that, you know, didn't want you. And yeah, wasn't going to bring you back, but you come back and you earn your spot back. I mean, that's the idea. That's the basic, I believe in yourself story right there. So that's really good. And I commend you for, you know, your work ethic, because it's a lot, that takes a lot of work. I'm sure this wasn't like, hey, I'll skip a couple of days. I'm sure you were probably working every day at this, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. There was no skip days, and there's still no skip days, you know, even that, as far as I am now. But I'll tell you what, it was so rewarding when he handed me the ball on Friday night and said, this is, or handed me the ball Thursday or Wednesday night before, you know, he's like, prepare, because you're the Friday night starter. I don't think he liked it. I could tell there was something that he was like, he proved me wrong. Like, you know, he didn't want to swallow his pride, and it made that feeling so much sweeter in my mind and my, just the way I felt. But leading up to that, there were so many, you know, just nights where I didn't sleep, or I guess we'll say this, sleepless nights, a lot of emotional nights, a lot of emotional phone calls with my mom. She was always there no matter what, whether it was 2 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, she was always there when I was, you know, needed a, I don't want to say reassurance, but needed put back in the right line. You know, there were a lot of those phone calls were like, mom, I don't, you know, this is taking over my life. It's not fun. It's like, I turn it into a job. Like, it sucks. Like, I hate it. And it would get emotional. I would break down, and, you know, she would listen. She was good about that. And she would just say a few simple things. You know, she didn't need to give me a 20-minute spiel. She just would say a few lines, whatever it may be that day. And it was exactly what I needed to hear every time. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting about moms. It's like, I'll have conversations with my mom too. Not necessarily about baseball, but I'll call her up. I'll, you know, be like you did, you know, you have a rough time, you call them up, and they just, I think just the ability to listen. But you know, like you said, it's kind of crazy to know that they only have to say a few words and you feel like a ton better. You know, what's one thing that, you know, like that mom said to you that just really clicked and was just like, all right, you know, I'm going to go back to do this. I got it. Mom, thanks so much.
Honestly, it was just, a lot of it was, remember that I love you and that everything you've done, you've made us so proud to this point. Mm-hmm. Hearing that, it's like, well, I don't want to stop making you proud, so why would I quit now? So it was almost like the instant turnaround. Mm-hmm. She still does it to this day. I don't have too many of those phone calls anymore, but after a rough night, she's like, listen, Josh, you sucked. You had a bad night. Well, I watched. I'm like, yeah, mom. I know. Like, I can chuckle about it. I'm like, come on. Like, all right, I get it. And like, just that laugh right there that she can bring out of me just instantly makes me feel better. And she's like, listen, you know, I'm still proud of you no matter what. She's like, your career could end tomorrow. And I still would, you know, she's like, you're not a failure to me. You've done everything you wanted to do and then some, and had to jump through a lot of hoops and over a lot of hurdles to come back. It's, you know, it's impressive. She said this the other day. She's like, it's impressive what you've done after having all these injuries and coming back and continue to keep doing it. She goes, I would have quit a long time ago if I were you.
Yeah. So. You're probably an inspiration for your mom.
I mean, she's the inspiration. Her and my dad are the inspiration for me. I try to be inspiration for kids that are younger than me.
Yeah.
I try to do that, but no, they've been, you know, everyone says they have a hero or something like that. Mine's always been my parents, and that always will be my parents.
Nice. Very cool. You get drafted in 2017 by the Kansas City Royals. You know, you're going through the draft and then you finally hear your name called. You know, what was that feeling like for you to hear your name called?
So I really didn't pay attention to the first day because I knew I wasn't going the first day. First two rounds, I'm like, yeah, so, you know, I was projected anywhere from 7 to 20. There's 7 to 15 where my projection from scouts and coaches and stuff like that. So I was like, all right, you know, that's when I'll start paying attention. Seventh round goes, nothing. Eighth, ninth, 10th. I start getting calls in like the 12th or 13th. They're like, hey, will you sign for $1,000 in this? I go, no, I'll pass. And so I kept going. And then the 20th round rolls around and I'm like, what in the hell is going on? I'm like, I was projected all these, you know, 7 through 15 and I got one call in the 10th or two calls in the 10th and all of a sudden I'm done. Like, it's whatever. So I had gotten so mad. I'm like, I'm just going to go sit outside. I ain't doing anything. Just leave me alone, mom and dad. And so my parents still have the draft tracker on that MLB TV pops up. And my phone starts ringing. And I'm like, I'm like, it's probably one of my friends playing a joke on me. Because my buddies were big into it too. Like, oh, Josh, listen, this is, I had some teammates that researched on what teams needed. I was like, they were all about it. Some of my high school buddies were all in on it. They were all for it. They, you know, they wanted me to succeed. And I was so fed up. I was like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm going back to school. Great. So phone rings and I'm like, I'm not going to answer it. Rings again. It's like still the same call. Ring. Nothing. I'm like, no, I'm not looking at it. Rings again twice. Third time. I'm like, all right, should probably pick it up. Look at it. Look at the number. I'm like, Kansas City, Missouri. I'm like, who in the world is calling? Oh, I slid, answered it. And then he goes, the scout that called me, he goes, hey, Josh, turn on the TV. So I flip, and so I'm like, mom, check it. And she recorded it with the, you know, the 22nd round. The Kansas City Royals left-handed pitch of Josh Mitchell. I was like, all right, that's pretty cool to see.
Nice. So that, you know, you get picked by the Kansas City Royals to go play for them. You've been in their farm system now for a couple years. What's that experience been like for you coming up through the Royals farm system and now in AA ball with the Wichita?
Well, so, I mean, when I was at Kansas City, they were a great organization that took care of me through some ups and downs, injuries, stuff like that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're in Minnesota now. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm in Minnesota now, yeah. But, I thank Kansas City every time we talk. Someone asked me about this because they gave me a chance. They took the chance on a kid that kind of struggled a lot, had his ups and downs, more downs than ups in college. But they gave me a chance, and I ran with it, and now – thankful the Minnesota Twins gave me another opportunity, even better one, you know, with the Rule 5. So we're taking this one and we're running with it. And that's the biggest thing is when you get the opportunity, you don't let it go. And that's mm-hmm. what I'll tell to everybody. I might not throw the hardest. I might not be the best, you know, have the best stuff or the most talented, but having the opportunity is all that matters. People bitch and complain about money or stuff like that. The opportunity is what means the most. And you have to take advantage of it when you do get it.
Yeah, and I will say this Target Field is really, really nice field, by the way.
Yeah, I've heard the Target Field,
and it's amazing. I don't think it's like one of those you could take it, just put anywhere else. It's perfect for where it is. So, and I do apologize about misinformation on there. You got drafted by Kansas City, and now you are with the Minnesota Twins farm system. So I do apologize and correct myself. So you're with this Wichita. How's that? I mean, you know, I know you got hurt this year, but how was that experience for you with Wichita?
It was great. I love my teammates. It was a special group. And then I played on some good teams, but that was a special group to me just because we all had fun when it was time to have fun. No one really screwed up or messed around it. But then when it was time to go to work and take care of business, we did, you know, and it was a nice combination of older and younger guys mixed together. And we had, all we wanted to do was play baseball. And it was like, I couldn't have been in a better situation. I was like in heaven with that. All we wanted to do was play a ball. It was great.
And how did you get hurt this year?
Well, I think it had been just, you know, years of wear and tear on the elbow. It hadn't felt the best in the last year and a half, 2 years, I would say. But I thought that, you know, I'm like, listen, I'm getting older. My bounce back or recovery isn't the best. So maybe it's just the new norm. I didn't think anything of it. Didn't get an MRI, nothing crazy. And then six innings into the season, my UCL pops. Yeah, I felt it. I felt the pop, but at the time, I was so, you know, it was the ninth inning of the game. I was so focused on the outing that I thought my elbow had just cracked. Like, you know, just a nice little quick little, like, wake up in the morning, pop, all right, I'm ready to go. I had no pain, no tingling, nothing. And I get on the mound, and my catcher calls a fastball. And I explain, "All right, great, here we go. Let's reach back and throw by this dude." I threw it. It was 84 miles an hour with the most excruciating pain I've ever felt in my life. And I just, like, I winced, and I caught the – and he called time as soon as he caught it. He came running out. He goes, "You good? What was that?" I go, I'm like, "Listen, man." I'm like, "I blew my elbow out." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, my UCL popped. It's gone." And he goes to reach for the trainer. I go, "No, listen, it's a Sunday day game. We're not burning anybody else. I'll finish the inning. But every time you throw a fastball down, just know it's not coming very hard. And if anyone asks, I'm just throwing changeups." He goes, "Are you sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, we'll figure it out." And finished the inning in the most immense pain of my life. I ended up giving up a run, but in the most immense pain of my life. And I went and sat down, and they tied the game up, and I was a little pissed. But we ended up losing the game. But I went and sat down, and I go to my trainer. I'm like, "Listen, something's not right." He goes, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "We need to go to the training room." He goes, "Why?" Because I can't straighten my arm right now. And it's swallowed up, all that stuff. He goes back and does all the UCL tests. And the one thing leads to another. I get an MRI the next day, and then there we are. we find out 2 days after the MRI, or a day after the MRI, that I have a torn UCL. Got a couple tears in my flexor tendon as well. I got some bone spurs. So pretty much I had the trifecta of everything you could possibly have at an elbow.
Mm-hmm. But you had the surgery. It was successful. And you're on the road to recovery right now. And how are you doing personally? And where are you at in your recovery?
So this past Wednesday, I actually just made it 12 weeks from post-op. I am living my best life in Southwest Florida right now. I really am. I'm enjoying the beach. I'm enjoying the teammates that I do have here. I completely restructured my, I want to say this, and I'm going to be honest, I completely restructured my entire life to just focus on baseball. My priorities are finally set and where they need to be. And it's been fun to see, like, the takeoff, the rehab. You know, I started rehab at 215 pounds, and the goal was to leave rehab in March, next March, at 230. And right now I'm 242 pounds. You know, the amount of, you know, weight and strength that I've gained is unbelievable. And the amount of betterment of myself, just realizing what I can do to better myself and talking with a sports psychologist, I'm living my best life. Yes. And I'm living in the best version of myself that I could have ever possibly dreamed of. And, you know, and I'm 26 years old, and I'm so happy that I found it at a young age, because I know people that walk through life that are just miserable, that are upset, that are just mad. And I never wanted to be that, but I didn't think I was ever going down that route. Well, sitting down with the sports psychologist once a week, face to face, it's changed my life. It really has. And just being in a good environment, being in a healthy environment, being in a healthy state of mind is, made me, you know, the best version of myself.
Excellent. That's good to hear. You know, you don't really, to be honest, you don't get a lot of people who are willing and freely willing to talk about something such as health and mental health and being able to put that out there. But I hope that you talking about it, just like some others, helps somebody else to be willing to talk about it and go get that help. Because, you know, definitely, I know being a combat veteran myself, like I understand like what it means to have to go talk to somebody and hey, maybe there's not that great feeling, but you feel good coming out the other side though. So
you really do. And that was the biggest thing to, you know, in a clubhouse full of these high-end elite athletes, like sometimes asking for help goes out the door because you don't think you need it. You don't think it's like, you know how to ask for help. Is have you ever, you know, some of these athletes here, some of these guys, like they've never asked for help. Mm-hmm. And it just builds up and builds up and builds up to where they're at the breaking point and something bad happens. So I saw Tommy John rehab as the perfect time to make sure to really fine tune my mental skills, and my mental health. And it's been the best decision of my life. It really has.
Yeah. And when do you think are you back throwing yet, or at what point will you be throwing? I'm not, you know, clearly I'm not overly familiar with where you are at with your rehab, but at what point do you anticipate throwing if you haven't been already?
So I chose the accelerated program. The doctor and I kind of talked it out, and he's like, you're a perfect candidate for it. So next week, actually, next Monday, I start throwing a baseball. I'll be 13 weeks. Yeah.
Right. It's I'm sure
13 week mark.
You're excited inside.
It's not just the inside, it's outside too.
yeah. I mean, for those of you can't see this, they clearly are not gonna be able to see this, but there's this huge smile. It's like this little white coming through this big dark beard that I can see.
Yeah, it's there. It's unreal. And you know, I'll flick a baseball every now and then. It's like I'm just so excited to actually be able to throw it forward.
Yeah.
Just have in my hand and just like, yeah, I've done some conditioning on the field and stuff like that, but nothing beats lacing up your spikes, putting your hat on and grabbing your glove and going out to the field. Mm-hmm. Like nothing beats that. And just knowing that I get to pick this baseball up and throw it, I think it's only gonna be like 45 feet the first couple of days, but I get to throw it that far to someone again after how horrendous my elbow was. Like even if I don't ever play another inning, that's a win for me.
Yeah. So last couple questions for you. We're going to take a little bit different route here. All right. What's your favorite baseball movie?
Movie? Oh, man. There's so many good ones. You're killing me here. So I'm not a sappy Field of Dreams guy. Good movie. It's too sappy for me. I honestly have to say Major League.
Oh, perfect. Yes.
And a funny story about that, in 2015, I actually had the Wild Thing haircut for the Harbor Cats.
Oh, you did? You had the Rick Vaughn?
I did. I had my roommate do the Rick Vaughn in the back of my head, the lightning bolt.
Oh, that is perfect. I gotta ask Jim or somebody if they have a picture of that.
It's got to be out there somewhere. It has.
Okay. I'm going to look for that because I want to find it. I want to repost it on repost it so I can see.
I also had a great handlebar mustache too.
There's
pictures out there.
Nice. I kind of imagined you like messing around being the type of guy that would like grow a mullet out and just have like rock the mullet too.
I see. That's the thing. Up top, it's always like the fade, you know, whatever it may be, but I'll mess around with some stuff on the face. I'll do that. Like we're going to have like Christmas time. I'm going to dye my beard white. I'll be Santa Claus. Like, that's me. I'm that kind of guy.
Nice. Last question that I want to ask. And it's going back to, Jim and his group back in Victoria. If you're going to have a kid who's either in high school, a high school senior going into his freshman year of college, or you have an underclassman who's playing ball, you know, how would you describe to them, like, hey, really go check Victoria out and, you know, go check the West Coast League out? What would you say to them?
I would give them Jim's number and say, listen, you're going to talk to him for 10 minutes. and he's going to have you already buying your ticket after the end of the phone call. He really is. He's a man of many talents. He really is. He's a hell of a salesman when it comes to the Harbor Cats. But I would give him the rundown. I would be like, listen, the bus rides are going to be long. Competition is going to be good. You're going to play in front of a lot of fans. Like, what else could you ask for? I know there's the Cape and everything, so that's so glorified. But, like, you want to get down and dirty and you actually want to get better, I'm telling you, the West Coast League is where it's at. They're not just about winning, which winning's secondary to a lot of teams, except for when we had Greg, because that's all we cared about. But the development as a person, as a player, like – it gives you the best opportunity. Plus, you get to experience some new culture. You're living in Canada. Like, I know it's not much different, but it is different. Mm-hmm. But you get to experience some stuff, and not a lot of people get to say they do. So,
yeah,
that would be my biggest thing. And plus, you know, success leaves clues. Like, there was a reason I went back. I had such a great year. So, look at my numbers and look at what here, and then you apply that to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I know one last thing before we end it. I know, you know, when I was talking with Jim, he's always like, go tell Josh to say, you know, ask him about Mr. Swanson.
He told you that, huh?
Yeah, he told me. Like,
yeah. All right. So that's a respect thing. My parents really, you know, I want to say beat in the respect part. So yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, all that. Mr. Mrs. kind of thing. And from the moment I got to Victoria in 2015, it was Mr. Swanson this, Mr. Swanson that. I never really called him Jim. And every now and then I'll do it just to like tease him. I'll call him Jim, but see if he picks up on it, but it's still Mr. Swanson. And he's like, you just call me Jim. I go, no, I'm not going to do it. Like, it's like, it goes against everything I was taught, how I was raised, everything. But every now and then, like I said, I'll give him a little gym to, like, you know, make him feel good about himself. Maybe things he went in and then Mr. Swanson like 10 minutes later.
yeah. You know,
so, Jim, if you're listening, now you got the story. Now you know what's good. Now you know what's coming. So you're welcome for that.
Yeah. You know, I have the same thing. Like, I know when I reached out to you, I was like, Mr. Mitchell, and, you know, just, you know, level of courtesy, you know, and I think your parents were the same in that perspective of, hey, you know, your elders are there, or any other person, just out of respect. So
yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, it's kind of like it's kind of gone by the wayside as the years have gone on.
Yeah,
I'll be down here in Florida and say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and somebody will look at me and be like, what'd I do? it's just a respect thing, you know. I'm not doing anything bad. It's yes, sir, no, sir, and they kind of look at you. It's like. And I did it to somebody when we were out to eat. The guy like looked at me like he was kind of taken back. I'm like, did I say something wrong? Did I offend you? He goes, no, I just haven't heard that in such a long time.
Yeah. So, some people like it, you know, and they know, see that there's respect. And then there's some people like, hey, you know, I look around, like, I think you're talking to my dad when you're telling me that. So, but Josh, this has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and your rehab to join me on the podcast. So thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I know we've been playing phone tag with this for a little bit, but you're busy. I'm busy. I'm glad we got to sit down and do this. It was a great time.
It was a great time. So appreciate it. Thank you so much. And that'll do it for this episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. As always, I'm your host, Ben. And Josh, thanks once again for joining us. Peace out.